All right, guys, you are Locked On Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is another Q&A episode where I will be answering your listener questions dealing with the Atlanta Falcons.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years at FalcFans.com, on Twitter at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today is a Q&A episode. We can call this a Monday mailbag. This might be a regular thing until news starts happening in this offseason, and we can actually start talking about specific topics. And certainly later we will be breaking down various position groups and reviewing the season. So this may not be necessarily, you know, a continued streak of 15 straight Mondays of a mailbag, but this may be, you know, just the go-to of what we will do on Monday. So definitely, if you want to send in all your questions over the weekend or late in the week, and I will do my best to answer them on this episode and future episodes. Of course, you can do so by sending them in to the show's Twitter handle, which is Locked On Falcons. You can check out the Facebook page, Locked On Falcons. Of course, you can email me if you hate social media. That's LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Or you can leave a comment at FalcFans.com, where the podcast is posted daily. So without further ado, let's get into it. Our first question comes from My God is an Angry Metal Bird God at Bird God Cultist on Twitter. He asks, will Ryan continue to catch more touchdowns than Saubert under the new offensive coordinator? I think the answer is no. I think the Philly special is probably a one-time occurrence. I think I will be pleasantly surprised if Matt Ryan finishes his NFL career with more than one receiving touchdown. But you never know. Maybe it becomes a staple of the Falcons offense moving forward. I wouldn't begrudge it. I'm just not expecting it. So that doesn't guarantee that Saubert will have more touchdowns than Matt Ryan, but all he has to do is beat zero is basically what I'm saying. So I think it's probably a safer bet to go over under Saubert beating that zero in the future. We'll see. Our next question comes from Spencer Williams at Jevic7026. Do you think the Falcons will go to more of a power game or a balance of West Coast and Air Coryell? No, I think they're still going to be basically what they have been. I think the whole notion of sort of Cutter running a different scheme, we've probably overrated that a little bit, including myself has done so. It's an odd marriage, and I'll get to why I think it's a little bit problematic. But I think for the most part, we'll continue to be the zone-based offense that we're going to be. You can argue that we should probably take what Dan Quinn says with a grain of salt, but that doesn't seem like a thing he's going to lie about. And with the talent, with Devontae Freeman and Ito Smith and those guys on the roster, and with our offensive line and sort of Jake Matthews and Alex Mack being really good in that scheme, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to change it up just to accommodate who? Wes Schweitzer, Brandon Fusco, whoever our right tackle is going to be. You know, like, it doesn't make any sense to do that. So I think the Falcons will continue that. I guess for me, the question is, you know, the concern is in Cutter's offense, you know, one of the staples of the Shanahan type of offense with that outside zone is all the bootlegs and play action and rollouts that you run off of that. And that's a staple of the offense, and that's never really been a staple of the Cutter offense. Certainly wasn't in Atlanta, and from my observations, but again, I'm no expert on his Tampa Bay offense. That wasn't necessarily a staple of his offense in Tampa Bay. Maybe if you go all the way back to Jacksonville, maybe it was, but I don't know. To me, my concern is going to be with Cutter is when push comes to shove, when your back is against the wall, all those cliches, you tend to fall back onto what your bread and butter is, what is comfortable with. And this is where we talk about, where I've talked about quite a bit with identity and questions about the Falcons' lack of identity. And that was a problem with Sark, because too often when the Falcons' back came against the wall, because Sark doesn't have this offense that he's been developing for 8 to 10 years in college and in the pros to fall back on. And, you know, the Falcons' personnel was sort of all over the place with sort of what they were trying to invest in versus what they were actually calling, you know. This became a problematic for the offense because it seemed like too often not they were just throwing stuff at a wall and seeing what sticks. My concern with Cutter is going to be when we get into similar situations, whether that's in, like, say, week 11 of the season or week 7 or in the postseason, what is he going to fall back on? Is he going to fall back onto sort of his old proclivities, which is to be more of this pass first, four verticals offense, which is not necessarily the sort of variation of the Shanahan scheme that it still seems like Dan Quinn is intent on running? That's my big question. That's why I think there's concerns about the marriage and the fit of these two guys together. And particularly when you look in light of recent events, you look at Seattle, you look at Minnesota, you look at the dismissal of Daryl Bevel in Seattle and replaced by Brian Schottenheimer. You look at John DeFilippo's dismissal in Minnesota this past year. By and large, they were dismissed because the head coach wanted to run the football more. And that's been something that Dan Quinn has insisted since the end of the season. And one of the things I've tweeted in the past and talked about in the past is, you know, I thought, oh, Sark's, the biggest reason why Sark got fired is the Falcons never showed up against quality opponents. Well, looking up some numbers and sort of listening to what Dan Quinn has said after the season, and you can make the case maybe we should take what Dan Quinn says with a grain of salt, but in this case I'll buy into what he's saying. It seems like to me the main reason that Sark got fired is because the Falcons didn't run the ball enough. And looking up the numbers, the Falcons, you know, were ranked 30th in the league in terms of the percentage of plays that were runs in the league this year. They were dead last in the league in terms of the percentage of first downs that were runs, when presumably, at least in theory, your offense on first down should be the most balanced that it is. And that number should be as close to 50% run, 50% pass. And I think for the Falcons, it was like 38% run, 62% pass, which was, you know, the highest ratio, depending on how you want to term it in the league. And that to me is probably the biggest reason. That's why Dan Quinn keeps talking about physicality. And if you follow me on Twitter, on Falcons, you're going to see me use the hashtag physicality a bunch this offseason, because I think that's going to be sort of the narrative that the Falcons are going to push forward. And, you know, it's interesting with Cutter, because when you look historically at his offenses, he has typically had more seasons where they were more like this past year's Sark's offense, where they were exclusively a pass-first offense, whether that was in Atlanta, as well as his last year in Tampa Bay calling the offense in 2017. But what is interesting is Dan Quinn specifically mentioned after the announcement of Cutter's hire, referring to Cutter's time in Jacksonville when they ran the football with Maurice Jones-Drew. And when you actually look at that five-year run from 07 to 2011, when Cutter was calling plays in Jacksonville under Jack Del Rio, the Jaguars were one of the most run-heavy teams in the league. They ran the ball almost 2,400 times over that five-year run, which was the third highest in the league at that time. By the way, the Falcons were seventh in the league during that run, running the ball over the course of that five-year period, only 50 less times in the league. And as you may recall, that was the bulk of the peak of Michael Turner's years in the league when the Falcons. So what's interesting to me is it seems like Dan Quinn wants the Falcons offense to be more like that Jaguars offense. But my concern is, does Cutter want to turn it more into the sort of the post Michael Turner prime years from 2012 to, you know, 2014 and sort of what he had in Tampa Bay when Doug Martin was either injured or not there, which was still more of a pass first offense. So those are going to be the concerns, and how does that marriage work out now? You know, some people, going back to Sark for a second, some people say, oh, the Falcons were this pass-first offense, and that's an indicator of how predictable their offense was. I think that's a load of BS. I think Sark was more than justified in basically being this quote-unquote one-dimensional offense because of how good the Falcons' passing attack was. Just look at Matt Ryan's numbers, particularly in the first half of the season, and compare it to how uninspiring their running game was in the first half of the season. Now things picked up in the second half of the season, but I think the biggest knock on Sark was not that they were predictable in what they were doing. Although, you know, some of the second and long runs were a little bit predictable, but that being said, they were probably more successful on those second and long runs than your average NFL team, when at least with some of the data I saw. But anyway, that being said, I think the problem that Sark ran into was not that they were one-dimensional, it was that when they did pass the ball, too often, I think they were sort of settling for these 8 to 12 yard quick throws rather than dialing up the shot plays that I think, you know, in an ideal world, and it's not fair to compare Sark to Shanahan, but we constantly do it and we'll continue to do so, that Shanahan would have been dialing up shot plays on those plays. And I think in part because of the Falcons' lack of confidence in their offensive line to hold up, they were just going to the quick game. And then too often during that time, particularly that 5-game run where they were, the offense was stagnating, I think they were a little bit too reliant on running the football. And you would see these sort of series where they would run it on first down, run it on second down, throw it on third down, and then punt and have a 3-and-out. And you're like, why is the offense not working? Because they became this very vanilla offense. And my concern is, it seems like Dan Quinn wants to go back to that. So that all being said, I know I just painted some of this sort of doom and gloom. And, you know, given it's mid-January and in my emotional and mental state, I tend to be a little bit more pessimistic now before the offseason starts, while others may be more positive. Here's what I'll say. It could all work out. The Falcons under Cutter could be balanced, run the ball 45% of the time. Devontae Freeman comes back and has a great season. Ito Smith makes a leap, and they are one of the better 1-2 punches in the league. Calvin Ridley improves. Hooper improves. Julio does his thing. Sanu does his thing. Matt Ryan continues to play at a Pro Bowl plus level. The offensive line is improved. The defense makes a leap. All of it works out just fine. I don't want to sit here and act like this is destined to fail because I'm not thrilled with this hire of Dirk Cutter or whatever, or the statements of Dan Quinn. It could all work out. I will just say in mid-January, I am not in a state of mind where I'm as willing as maybe other people might be to be optimistic about it working out. It could work out, and we may get through the offseason, and by the time we get to May and June, when we can look back at the entire offseason and be like, oh, the Falcons really made a lot of moves that I think are going to put them in a position where the best case scenario could happen for them. We could get there. I'm just not there yet. So, you know, that all being said, it could go either way. We'll see how it works out. I'm just curious to see how it works out, and sort of at face value, I could see how this could go wrong. I could see the Falcons being in the playoffs next year or not in the playoffs next year. But let's say in the playoffs next year and we get a situation like Seattle and Dan Quinn, let's establish the run, and then the offense stagnates against a good defense and the Falcons get bounced in the playoffs. And we're like, what happened to this great offense? And everybody's going after Cutter and everybody's going after Dan Quinn because of the whole, you know, hashtag physicality, let's establish a run mentality. Or they, you know, they could do the opposite and be really good next year. Who knows? We'll see how it plays out. Now, we got more questions to answer on today's Q&A/Monday mailbag episode. But before we get to those questions, I do wonder if you guys were like me, and did you get a smart speaker over the holidays? I got a Google Home. And you know, if you're like me, or you've got one of those things, you got an Alexa or whatever, or a Google Home or any of the other ones out there on the market, did you guys know that you can use it to play your favorite Locked On podcast? You can just tell it to go play podcast Locked On Falcons and boom, you're good to go. You're listening in 2 seconds. You're listening to the latest episode of this Locked On podcast. So definitely try it out if you haven't already. And, you know, there's no better way to get the latest updates on your favorite daily Locked On podcast, whether that's an NFL show, an NBA show, a college show. All right, let's get into our next question. From Darkest Timeline DW at Falcoholic DW, he asks, why are you the way that you are? Well, DW, that's a long question, you know. And this podcast often forms becomes my therapy. And will continue to be. I don't pay an expensive therapist. I can just sit on the podcast and meander for 30 to 45 minutes about my personal problems. And you guys, you know, get to hear it for free. I think it's a pretty good deal. I do say so myself. But, you know, to actually answer this question semi-seriously, I think part of it is, and this stems a little bit from my sort of contrarian viewpoint, is I like to think a little bit outside the box. And we have a question coming up where I can sort of specifically illustrate this point. But like I tend to think, I try not to fall into the groupthink mantra. And I think it's very easy for people to fall into the groupthink mantra and sort of think about things that are easy and simple and obvious. And then when you come along and you say something that's different from that, they're like, oh, that's a hot take. And it's like, it's not a hot take. It's just, you know, for lack of a better term, your take is basic, you know, you're basic. it's one of those. And then, you know, 6 months later or a year later, you know, everybody's like, you know, hot take. Aaron thinks Vic Beasley's overrated. And then, you know, just wait enough time. And it's like, yeah, everybody thinks Vic Beasley's now overrated. You know, who was the first one telling you that back in like October of 2016? You know, it was myself and my former podcast associate. So, you know, that's the benefit of watching film. And so you sort of pick up on things sometimes earlier than other people do. And it is what it is. You know, I remember saying after the Cincinnati game that, you know, someone was like, oh, Tack McKinley's the best player on the Falcons defense. And I'm like, no, Grady Jarrett is. You know, Tack McKinley's had, you know, two good games against Cincinnati and Carolina, but Grady Jarrett's the best player in the Falcons defense. And then fast forward the rest of the season, you know, it's not even a conversation anymore. But, you know, you just pick up on things. It is what it is. But anyway, next question comes from, once again, my God is an angry bird, metal bird god. I love that name. At Bird God Cultist on Twitter. He has, taking the Falcons zigzag factor into account, what's a non-offensive line, defensive line player or position that they might realistically take in round one? Is there someone so good that they'd have to take best player available if they drop to 14? And this is what I'm talking about with sort of the last answer is it's fascinating to me. On Friday's episode, someone asked the question about Falcons taking a tight end in the first round. And while I sat there and basically gave the reasons why they probably wouldn't do it, at least for that 3 minutes of sitting there thinking about it, I could wrap my head around the concept of the Falcons taking a tight end in the first round. And then when I was promoting the show on Twitter and tweeting about it, sort of answering that question, there was a decent amount of pushback on Twitter about like how ridiculous that was. And it was like the fact that so many people out there can't even wrap their brain around the concept of the Falcons not taking offense. I've even seen people not even being able to be open to the possibility of the Falcons not taking a defensive lineman in the first round. They can't even fathom a reality where they take an offensive lineman. And I think, you know, going back to the question where we talked about the scheme and Dirk Cutter and being this hashtag physical offense, I think there's every reason to think that there's a really high probability or possibility at the very least that the Falcons take an offensive lineman because they're going to be about, we need to be a physical and run the football team. And we need to reap what we sow, and we're going to sow the seeds of being a physical offensive line. That means drafting first-round offensive linemen for the first time in 5 years, or using our first pick on an offensive lineman for, what, the third time in 10 years? We'll sort of see how that plays out. But, like, it's fascinating to me that people can't even wrap their brains around the possibility, particularly at this point in time where the draft is 14 weeks away, guys. And it's one of those things where it's like, it's literally the same distance. It's like someone asking you who's going to win the Super Bowl in week three of the season, or who's going to make the playoffs in week three of the season. You can make a guess based off of the first three games of the season, but it's not going to be an accurate guess. Like, you look at the 14 teams this past year that started the season 2-1 or better, had an above 500 record after three games. Six of those teams made the playoffs. You look at the 14 teams that started the season 1-2 or worse, or 1-2 or 0-3, six of those teams made the playoffs. So there is no sort of like, you know, it takes some time. And so you got to sort of let things sort of develop right now. But all that to preamble to get to the meat of the question, I would sit here and say, I think there's a very high probability that the Falcons offensive line, or the Falcons will take an alignment, offensive or defensive lineman in the first round. I can't be 100% confident this early in the process, but as confident as I can be, you know, like let's say 72% confident in mid-January is the max you could be. So I'm like 71% confident that they'll take one of those players. So, but that being said, if I were to guess the most likely position outside of those two spots, I would guess would be a cornerback. Which I wouldn't necessarily agree with, but I could see it happening just because you have Isaiah Oliver, Desmond Trufant might be entering the last year. He's in Atlanta. KZ and Poole or nickel guys, and having another outside corner makes a lot of sense. And, you know, if we were sort of narrowing it down, I haven't done enough homework on the cornerbacks this year, but if we were narrowing it down to one specific player, if Georgia's DeAndre Baker was there, I do think he would sort of fit what the Falcons should be looking for at that position. I know a lot of people are like, oh, we need to get another big corner. I don't think you need to. I think you need to get a guy that can handle speed, because I think that's going to be in the future where Isaiah Oliver is handling the size. I think you're going Oliver against the big guys, the Mike Evans, the Michael Thomases. And I don't know if he's going to be the guy that you're going to want handling the intermediate sized fast guys, the Emmanuel Sanders, the Antonio Browns, the Deshaun Jacksons of the world, the Doug Baldwins of the world, although Doug Baldwin's a slot receiver. But you know what I'm saying. I don't know if that's going to be Oliver's forte. And so getting a guy that long term can sort of, you know, can be the Chris Harris to Oliver's Aqib Talib makes a lot of sense in my mind. And I think maybe you can make a case that DeAndre Baker is that guy, because, you know what, he's like, I think he's listed at 5'11", but he's probably going to be like 5'9 and three quarters or 5'10 in an eighth when he shows up to the combine. So I think he fits that mold a little bit better. So that's one idea. But again, the idea of where the Falcons can go in multiple ways in this first round is if they attack their offensive line needs and their defensive line needs aggressively in free agency, which it doesn't seem like they're likely to do, at least in terms of going all out, like I think some of us want and hope them to do. But like if they went out there and signed Brandon Graham and got Malik Jackson and signed Quentin Spain and signed some other offensive tackle, you know, the great Donovan Smith, and then all of a sudden you're looking at a situation where going into the draft. And again, I'm just throwing names out there, not suggesting that the Falcons will or should do those moves. But if they did all that, all of a sudden, the opportunities open up for them to be a little bit more creative with their first-round pick as opposed to just locking in on the best trench player available. So that's and the point I was making earlier is like the idea that people can't even imagine that scenario, I think is reflective of sort of the, for lack of a better term, the dumbed down analysis that you may get elsewhere out there in the Falcons Twitterverse or online community. That was my opinion, you know, hot take. But we got more to come on today's episode. And speaking of who you're going to draft, you know, if you want to find out more about these various high-level prospects, whether they're trench players or play other positions that the Falcons could potentially target in the first round and in subsequent rounds, you can do so on either one of the two podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network devoted to the NFL offseason, the first of which is the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast with hosts John Ledger and Trevor Sikkema. The second is the Draft News Podcast with hosts Joe Marino and Kyle Grabs. You can find them both wherever you get your Locked On podcasts, as well as at thedraftnetwork.com. That is thedraftnetwork.com, where you can find written content and video content from those four guys, as well as several other great NFL draft writers. Your team every day. Jay Cromwell at jcromwell12 asks, should the Falcons reach out to LA for Forrest Lamp? If so, what are you willing to give up? Well, the Forrest Lamp rumors, trade rumors were interesting because they sort of sprung up near the trade deadline, but it didn't seem like they were coming from the Chargers. It seemed like they were just something that somebody came up with. And I'm going to, you know, put this one to bed, Jay, because I just think I don't see the Chargers trading Forrest Lamp. Injuries derailed his rookie season in 2017, and it took him a while to come back from his injury this year, and he only got a couple of reps. But it's not as if the Chargers have a better option at right guard. They started Michael Schofield, who was basically on the same page as Ty Sambrello in Denver a couple of years ago and was actually the backup to Ty Sambrello. And he was serviceable at best this year for the Chargers at right guard this year. And so if you're the Chargers, why are you giving up on Forrest Lamp when he could potentially be your long-term solution at that right guard position? Now, maybe if the Falcons came at the Chargers with a first-round pick offer, which is more than what the Chargers used, they drafted him in the second round with the 38th overall pick. So maybe the Falcons offered either their first-round pick or their second-round pick this year. The Chargers might listen to that phone call if you called them up to offer that trade. But, you know, if you're the Falcons, would you give up that for a player that's basically played, what, one preseason game and garbage time and two regular season games over the last two seasons? No, you wouldn't. Even if I liked Forrest Lamp. I thought the Falcons would take him with their first overall pick, and then they took Tack McKinley 2 years ago. But, like, yeah, I think this idea that the Falcons could trade for him or the Chargers would be willing to trade for him, it just seems a little far-fetched. But, sure, if you can reach out for them and they're willing to give him up for a six-round pick, which I think is a 0.0 or -3,000% chance of happening, there ain't no, phone calls are free. You know, long distance is free. If you got a nationwide plan, I'm sure Thomas Dimitroff does. So, it doesn't hurt the call, but I just don't think it's realistic. Our last question comes from Tracy Edwards at Vic Tracy Ed on Twitter. He asks, would it be possible for Kubiak to come on board as an offensive consultant in a role similar to his role in Denver? It makes sense considering the Falcons have stated Cutter will be running a similar offense as last season, which hasn't been Dirk's comfort level. So I don't think it's possible that Kubiak would come on in a similar role that he has in Denver, because his role in Denver is more of a front office position. Essentially, if you're making the comparison, and maybe this is a little bit of a stretch, but his role in Denver is basically the same role that Scott Pioli has here in Atlanta. Basically, he's the assistant GM. So the Falcons aren't going to bring him on in that capacity because they already have Scott Pioli. So to answer that specific question, no. So if you're asking more of a consultant as far as coaching goes, the interesting thing about how the Denver situation broke down is it sounded like, from reading Mike Kliss, who is the most plugged in Broncos beat writer there is, in my opinion, and sort of his reporting on the thing, in addition to the other reports from various national quote-unquote insiders, it seemed like the Broncos were prepared when they were prepared to hire Vic Fangio as their head coach, who they have hired. He was prepared to keep Gary Kubiak on as their offensive coordinator. The problem was Kubiak wanted to bring along Rick Dennison and Brian Perriani, who, whenever he's been a head coach or an offensive coordinator at any point in the NFL, whether that's in Denver, whether it was in Baltimore, whether it was in Houston, have served in assistant coaching roles. When Kubiak was a head coach, Rick Dennison was his offensive coordinator. When Kubiak was an offensive coordinator, Dennison was his O-line coach, and Brian Perriani has been the tight ends coach regardless in all those stops as well. And from what it sounded like, Kubiak, in order to take over as offensive coordinator, he wanted to bring both those guys back to Denver where they've served in the past. And it seemed like Vic Fangio balked at that. He wanted to hire either his own offensive line coach or his own tight ends coach or both. And that's where basically, Kubiak was like, well, then I'm not going to do it. And then Vic Fangio was like, okay, then don't do it. We'll find somebody else. Again, I'm putting my own sort of editorializing into that. But that's what it sounded like. So I imagine if Kubiak is going to leave for another team, whether it has to be an offensive coordinator or in this situation, some variation of, assistant to the offensive coordinator or offensive consultant or whatever you want to call it, I would imagine his stipulations wouldn't change and he would want Dennison and Perriani to come with him. And given that the Falcons just hired a tight ends coach in Mike Mularkey and they already have retained their offensive line coach in Chris Morgan, it doesn't seem like Atlanta's going to be the situation where that is the case. So maybe he finds success elsewhere in other coaching staffs that have a little bit more turnover and are looking to fill those spots. And basically, Kubiak is one of a three-man package deal. But I don't think that's going to be Atlanta. So I don't think it's possible, long story short. So I appreciate everybody for asking their questions, and I hope I wasn't too long-winded on today's episode. If you, for some reason, forgot or skipped the first 3 minutes of the show, which, maybe some of you guys do because you hate, intros or something like that, and it'd be weird if you skip the intros of the show, which are generally fine, and listen to the outros of the show, which are consistently terrible. But to each their own. But if you skip all that to say, this is why the outros are terrible. All that to say is, if you missed where you can submit your questions for future mailbags, which may or may not become a regular thing on Mondays throughout the off season, is you can do so on outros are always terrible. Oh man. This is you talk for 30 minutes and you just want to end the show. That's probably what I should just start doing now. But anyway, you can send in your questions, your comments, your suggestions, whatever you want to say to me at FalFans. Of course, if it's podcast related, just indicate so in tweet. But if it is podcast related, just go ahead and send it to Locked On Falcons Twitter handle. That's the show's Twitter handle. Of course, that's the name of the Facebook page, Locked On Falcons. The email address is lockedonfalcons@mail.com. And of course, you can leave a comment at FalFans.com where the podcast is posted daily. Oh, I should let you know what the schedule is like for the rest of the week. That's a normal thing I do on Monday. Once again, butchering this outro. Hopefully, we will have the guest talking about Cutter's offense in Tampa Bay later in the week. That hopefully should be Thursday's episode. I'm hoping that we can get another guest on Wednesday to talk Falcons off-season stuff with me. And, you know, then we'll leave it open for Friday to do whatever you guys want to do. So if you want to do another Q&A, you can do so, whatever. I'm always open to suggestions. Maybe we start the regular season review stuff on Friday if I don't come up with something better by then. So Friday is wide open, basically, the point being. But that's what, you know, we probably won't be back tomorrow for that reason, but Wednesday and Thursday, we should definitely have some content for you guys with some guests. So there you have it. And until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.